the old resident area.
Yeah.
For a time.
Whereabouts in Brighton?
It was a good many years ago now. And like so many places, it's changed quite a bit, isn't it? And the back of the old stone there.
Back of the old steep?
Yes.
Mr. Higgins, can you tell me your reactions on passing over? How you found yourself?
How what?
How you found yourself? Your reactions when you did pass over?
Well, when I first sort of had any sort of realization or consciousness of what has happened to me, I was lying on a sort of bank overlooking a river. Mm-hmm. Couldn't make head or tail of it. I couldn't make out where I was. I didn't recognize the spot. And I couldn't think how I got there. And then I saw someone coming towards me, dressed what looked to me as if he was a monk. But I realized, of course, later it wasn't a monk, but he'd got a sort of long habit on, and he looked a very benevolent gentleman, and quite young. I thought this, when I first saw him, I thought, dear, when I realized that he, at least I thought he was a monk, I thought he is a young man, a young person to be a monk. As a matter of fact, quite frankly, I thought it myself at the time, and he looked just like Jesus, at least what I'd seen pictures of Jesus. But I realized, of course, he wasn't afterwards. And he came and stood beside me and spoke to me. He said, he says, you've arrived. I says, arrived? I didn't quite know what you mean. He says, you don't realize then that you're here where you are. So I says, no, all I know is I don't recognize this place. It's very beautiful. And he says to me, he says, you're dead, you know. I says, what? He says, yes, he says, you're dead. I says, I'm not dead, how can I be dead? I wouldn't be able to see him. And I felt myself, I says, look, I says, how can I be dead? Look, I'm solid, you know. He says, he says, a lot of people seem to think, he says, on your side, when they're dead, they're either nothing at all, or if they're dead, that they go to heaven, or they go to some other place, like hell. He says, there's no such place as heaven, there's no such place as hell. He says, you are in a condition of life, he says, which is as real as you can see for yourself, as anything you've ever known before. He says, life, he says, beyond what you call death, is a state of mind. He says, your condition at the moment is perhaps a little bewildered, he says, but you're not unhappy, and certainly you seem, as far as I can tell, he says to me, you seem quite at ease, you seem quite calm and placid, you're not over anxious about anything particularly. I says, no, he says, but now I'm beginning to realize what you say is so. I says, I must admit I'm a bit concerned about my people. He says, I says to him, it must be a terrible shock for them, you know. He says, and I says, I have no recollection of dying. So I says, I don't remember anything but falling, at least I had a feeling I was falling, and then I don't remember that more. And he says to me, he says, but of course, he says, you died in hospital, you know. So I says, oh, did I? So he said, would you like to go back just for a little while to see your people? He says, do you think that would help you? So I says, well, it would be interesting, wouldn't it? I said, I would like to see them, but he says, they won't take any notice of you, you know. So I says, well, why not? He says, well, he says, they won't realize that you're there because they can't see you, and they won't hear you if you speak to them. So I says, well, there might point in going then, is it? And he says, well, it's up to you, sort of thing, you know. I says, oh, well, I'll go. I says, it's possible that Ada, that was my wife, she might. I'd like to see how she's getting on anyway. So she says, all right, she says, let's go. So I says, well, how do we get there then? So he says, you just come with me. He says, we just walked up this road. And I climbed up the hillside and onto the road, and we walked along. He says, just take my hand. I felt a bit peculiar. I thought, well, it seems a bit silly me holding someone's hand like this, but still, he says, hold his hand. So I held his hand. So I just held his hand, and I don't know, it seems so strange. But as soon as I touched his hand, it's just as if everything went sort of peculiar. It's as if everything gradually seemed to disappear. It was as if I was sort of, I don't know, going to sleep, I suppose, in a kind of way, and yet it wasn't like sleep. It was just a sort of lacking of understanding, of realization of things around and about me. I became sort of unconscious, I suppose. Next thing I knew, I was standing in our kitchen, and I was watching my wife. She was standing over the sink, peeling some potatoes. And I thought, well, this is funny. So I thought, well, I don't know. I wonder if she knows I'm here. And I called her name. She didn't say nothing. She didn't hear me, obviously. So my friend says, she won't hear you, you know. So she says, well, I don't know what could I do? She says, there's nothing you can do, he says. But she may sense your presence, you never know. He says, let's just wait a little while. So I just stood there and I concentrated. He says to me, he says, concentrate your thought on her. Just think hard. You know, think as hard as you can. You could think her name. And I did. And all of a sudden she stood up and she dropped down the knife and the potato she was peeling, and she looked round, looked proper bewildered. She looked almost scared. And I felt rather sorry in the way that I'd scared her, because I realised it must be me trying to get at her, you know. Anyway, she just flew out of the kitchen, and she opened the door, and then she sort of shut it again, and then she sat down, and then she put her head on the table and started to cry. And I felt awful about this. I thought, oh dear, now, this is terrible. But he says to me, he says, don't worry. He says, she senses, she feels, she knows in herself. She doesn't understand yet, but she knows in herself that you're near her. So I says, well, if I'm going to make her miserable like this, there's not much point, is it? So he says, don't let that worry you. He says, this often happens to people. He says, they don't know, he says, with any certainty. They've never been told about life after death. He says, they've never been told about the possibility of communication and all that sort of thing, he says. But she'll come, she senses, she feels, and she in herself, deep down inside, she knows. I says, well, isn't there nothing I can do? He says, nothing. He says, this is not the time, he says, you must wait. He says, later on, he says, perhaps we'd be able to do something. So I says, well, what do we do now? He says, well, he says, don't think you can do much more good here. I think the best thing for us is to go back. So I says, oh, all right. And I says, but I'd like to go to one or two other places before we go back, if I may. He says, well, where do you want to go? So I thought, well, be interesting, since, you know, I'd like to see various friends and then. So he says, well, all right. So I says, do you mind coming into a pub? He laughed when I said that. I says, you don't mind, do you? I says, seems a strange request for me to ask you, an angel, I says, to come into a pub. He says, we often go into the pubs and places, he says, and I'm not an angel, he says. So I says, well, I was under the impression that since you've been here, like, and highly respectable, like, and all that, you must be. I said, but I notice you ain't got no wings. And he laughed again. He says, of course you don't have wings. He says, that's the old idea that a lot of religious people get on earth, he says, about angels having wings. He says, that's because they always think that the people, when they die, that is, good people, he says, fly up into heaven. He says, and in the early days, he says, they used to think the only way to get up in the sky was to sprout wings like birds. He says, that's another one of the kinky things. He says, they get into the nuts, you know, because he didn't put it quite like that. It's my way of putting it. Anyway, he had a wonderful sense of humour, and I felt so sort of settled with him. So I says, well, I would like to go to this pub. He says, all right. So I thought to myself, well, this is going to be a bit awkward, because he obviously wouldn't know where the pub is, and I don't know how to get there on my own, not as I am now situated, you know, with no physical body, as you call it. So he says, I know what you're thinking. He says, you just think of the place. He says, close your eyes and we'll be there. So I thought, well, this is all right. So he put his hand out towards me. I thought, oh, well, I suppose I put my hand in his hand. So I did. Next thing I knew, I was standing in the bar, this pub, see, and there were three of my old mates there, and I went and stood up beside one, And I remember what I'd been told to do about the wife, to concentrate, his thing hard, you see. And he got this mug of beer up to his mouth, and I was thinking to myself, his name, see. And all of a sudden he plugged it down on the counter, you know, and he looked quite bewildered, looked round, and then he said to his mates, my other two friends, he says, "That's funny." He says, "I felt sure I heard." He says, "I felt sure I heard." So the other says, "Heard what?" So he says, "Didn't you hear nothing?" He says, "No, I didn't hear nothing." And I thought, well, I'm making, he thought, I suppose he's making a bit of a fool of himself. So he's always, this is his name, so they sort of laughed and said, "What's up with you, mate? Got the jizz?" You know, and they had a bit of a lark about it, but he heard me all that. But it was done by my force. One of the first things I realised was that you don't have to talk to be heard, you've got to concentrate hard. It's a matter of thinking all the time that you want to get into touch or you want to do something, and then it's possible. You just can't do it by sort of speaking up in the old way, you know. Always my first sort of lesson on this sort of thing. And then later on I was taken to a church, a spiritualist church. And I thought to myself, well, if I can only get a message over to my wife, see. But she never went to those sort of things. So, of course, by this time I got on quite a bit. And my friend, this gentleman I've been telling you about, I realised and knew a lot more about him. After a time I realised that he was a leader of a vast group of people over here, and he was a teacher, and I learned a great deal at the time, you know, from him, like. And later on he did say to me, he said, the only way, of course, that you can ever hope to get into touch with anyone connected with yourself on earth is to go to a spiritualist church. I said to him, well, I've heard all about spiritualist churches and all that sort of thing, but I've never ever been to one. I think the missus did go to one years ago, but she wasn't that keen about it, you know, and I never encouraged it. Anyway, I thought, well, that's one way. So the obvious thing to do is to go to a spiritualist church. So I trips off to a spiritualist church, which is not so far from where we used to be. And of course, my missus wasn't there. I went several times, she wasn't there, so I thought, well, the thing is, try and impress her to go to a spiritualist church. So I started visiting my missus again and started to impress her to go to a church. This must have been about 18 months after I'd conked out, you know, come over here, I see. So anyway, after a time, I got the idea into her head to visit a spiritualist church. Anyway, she wouldn't go on her own. She got her sister Floss to go with her, see. So one night I was at the church. I knew I'd got her to decide to go because I'd been working all day on her. In fact, I'd been working on her several days before. Anyway, she did go on this particular occasion with Floss. And they were sitting at the back. And a medium was on the platform. And I thought, well, I took one look at her and I thought, blimey, it would be my luck to get one like this. She didn't strike me as being much cop, you know. I'd seen them good and bad, you know. Mm. But this one seemed a bit on the oly-oly side, and she talked about things which was all right for them that likes it, but she wasn't so hot on the evidence, and she didn't seem to be able to describe very well. So I thought, I'll have a go, Joe, you know. Anyway, when she started to give the old messages, I thought, well, I've got to get in here somehow, you know. I thought, well, I had to do something, so I concentrated like mad on her, you know. And eventually she picked it up.
Come along, Alfred, that's lovely. Stay again, are you still there?
Sorry.
It's all right. Well, awfully good.
Mm-hmm.
Come along, Alfred. Oh, she gone?
I was trying to think.
Ah.
You know, what I could make her, you know, sort of get over to her, see.
Yeah.
Well, this here medium, she was hot. But anyway, she did pick me up. She got certain things that I was trying to get to her. I got I got her to talk about, she kept getting a ladder, of course she got it all back mixed up, excuse me, but she got it mixed up, you know. She says, I don't know, my dear, she says, if you're going to have a bit of luck, she says, but I see a ladder with you. I thought, crying out loud, this is getting on fine, this is. Anyway, of course, the missus did realise that, after all, I'd had this accident with the ladder. So my missus says, well, she says, I do place the business of the ladder, she says. And, of course, the medium got it all confused. She says, I think as there's something going to be very good for you, my dear. I see you rising, going up this ladder towards success. Because this wasn't what I was telling the damsel, medium, with all due respect. But it's her interpretation, you see. I thought, oh, blimey. Anyway, eventually I was able to get a few bits over, and then I was able to get my name through. That was a hard bit, getting my Christian name through, see. Oh, then my wife says, I think I understand all this very well, she says. And then she says, because I've got to kick my wife afterwards, because she says, my husband was killed on the ladder and his name was Elf. I thought, well, I did get that over after a start, but the medium knocked it up a bit. Still, anyway, so we're away. Anyway, and then I thought, well, what can I say that will really clinch it, see? So, so I thought to myself, now I've got to get something real out here, you know. So I says, at least I concentrate on the medium to say. I says, it was actually, when I'm trying to get through, it's as if you're saying it through the medium, but you're thinking it, see, it's all very difficult. So I says, I impress the medium to say, that ring that you have on, that is not the ring, not the same ring. You see, now this didn't seem to make much sense to anyone, I suppose, but it had a great deal of significance to my missus. Because what actually happened here was, my wife lost her wedding ring. And she tried not to let me know she'd lost it, knowing that I'd be upset about it. So she got and bought herself another one, which was, to all intents and purposes, identical. You see, so I thought, well, I knew about this, you see, because I'd learned that since I'd been over. That may sound odd to you, but it was in my wife's mind about this, that she had this wedding ring, new wedding ring, without my knowledge when on earth, but I knew. Well, since I've been over here, like, and I've been in touch with my wife, there's not much that I didn't know that went on. So I thought, well, that'll shake her, you know. So I thought it was about the wedding ring, you see, and about not the original wedding ring, and about buying a new one, you see. Of course, she went quite white. But she says, but how could my husband know that? I never told him, I'd kept it from him and all that, you see. So, of course, the medium preened herself, you know how they do, some of them. Well, of course, she says, you know, it's proof from your husband, isn't it, my dear? You see, you know, she would all la-la, she was getting it over posh, you see. She felt good that night. Of course, I was very glad for her sake, too, to give her a bit of a kick, you know. Some of these mediums, they get a bit down in the dumps, and they get a bad start at a meeting, they need something to buck them up, and I was glad I was able to do it, and my wife was getting a little bit through, too, you know. It was nice for everybody. I was really happy about that. Anyway, my wife, she became very interested after that, and she went to several meetings. Of course, now, by the way, she's here with me.
Oh, I got you.
But I'm talking about 30 odd years ago, you know.
Yeah.
But I made some laughs, you know.
Okay.
Some of the spiritualist meetings, you know. It's a shame because a lot of these people are very nice, very sincere, they're well-meaning, but half of them are half-baked, not really developed properly, and a lot of it is their imagination. Occasionally they do get something through. I mean, we're able to get something through their skulls, you know, and get it out, but the thing of trouble is that a lot of old dears, you know, they like to sort of get up there and, you know, sort of appear important to the rest of the congregation, and I suppose I shouldn't say this, they're well-meaning, but often they do a lot of harm, you know. Yeah. I'll never forget that first time getting through that medium. I don't think she'd ever done so well in her life. She was thrilled to marry. She really got, you know, really thrilled about it all. Of course, I'm going back, it's a long time now.
Mr. Higgins, Mr. Higgins' son, isn't it? What are you doing on the other side now?
Hey?
What are you doing on the other side now? How are you spending your time?
Well, I'm very, very happy in the various things that I do. I know it sounds crazy to you, I can't help it if it does or it don't, but certainly a lot of people would understand this, but I get a great deal of pleasure in looking after other people's houses and helping them get settled and when they first come here and doing little things for them. You see, people get this idea, Larry, that the places over here are not the same as on Earth. Well, in a sense, that's true. They're not quite the same, but people like a home and they like things around them that they've been used to. They like colour in their home and beauty, and often you get some poor old soul come here that perhaps had to live in one little back room and always wanted to have a nice little place, perhaps, shall we say, in the country surrounding, and have perhaps a pet dog or cat or some companion, you know. Yeah. And here we're able to help those dears, you know. And people just don't realise on your side the unhappiness that there is in the back streets, way tucked away. People see little of what really goes on. Most people are so interested in themselves and their own lives that they either don't think or they don't want to know about what goes on among so many people. Here, when they come here, some of these poor old things, the lonely people, some of them perhaps, some of them are there. Lived on their own for years. I'm always interested in the old folk. And of course, most of them, it's true, have their own people, relations here, and welcome them and all that. But I like to feel that I can help them with getting set in their home, and I do little jobs and help generally. We do decorate. People think this sounds silly, but you see, I'm talking about the conditions of a life which in some ways are very like the earth. The world in which we live is very, very similar in some respects and very natural. And that's a good thing it is, because who wants to come from your world who's just been an ordinary person, a kind person, not particularly bright or clever or talented perhaps? They don't want to suddenly become angels and go into a state of being which would make them feel most uncomfortable. In any case, even if they began to realize, it wouldn't really appreciate it, because the condition of life that some people talk about, as if that's the sort of life over here that they should expect, is so ridiculous. It's so far-fetched and so, well, I mean, it springs from, obviously, from the old idea of things that if you've been very good, you go to a beautiful world and you sort of become an angel and you become holy, holy and all the rest of it. That's not living. That's a sort of state of mind which really, when it's analysed, amounts to nothing. Ours is a real world in which there's all kinds of actions and all kinds of thoughts predominating like. And we have our houses and we have our places that we go to where we have wonderful music and we can entertain our friends and they visit us and we visit them. We have educational centres, we have great libraries where there's wonderful books you can read and places you can go to where you can see wonderful, I suppose you call them films, although they're not really films as you understand it, but there's a nearest way I can describe it, in which you can see depicted all manner of things appertaining to the to man and his development and life and how the evolution of nations and peoples and have evolved. And here we live together in peace and harmony, and colour and nationality mean nothing to us. We're all seekers, we're all children of one God, developing and progressing together in love and in harmony. There's none of this nonsense that you get on earth, and none of this narrow-mindedness and this pettiness. There's no friction like there is in your world between religions and organizations and political parties and all that sort of thing. Here we understand, here we realize that we're all truly part of God's kingdom, we're all part of his handiwork, and that we're all striving to develop and to better ourselves mentally and spiritually. And we're very human. A lot of people seem to think from your side that as soon as we come here, we cease to be human beings. We cease to be the same people. Of course, we're the same people, but we're a little bit wiser, a little bit more sensible, and a little bit more understanding understanding, a little more tolerant. Mm-hmm. I would say a lot more tolerant. We just don't have the old, our silly ideas that get taught year in and year out on your side. All this narrow creed and all the rest of it that doesn't help God's children, it separates them. Oh, God's children have the opportunity of survival in the highest sense, spiritually and mentally. You know, I wish I could explain things better, but I'm sorry your dear friend isn't with you, because I think he's a very nice man. Perhaps he'll come another time.
Well, he'll be very pleased with this tape, Miss Davy.
Well, you tell him I wish him well. I can't hold on much more, dear.
Right,
what was it you was going to say?
You have your wife with you. You're living in a house with your wife now.
We have a very nice little place that suits us.
Oh,
quite near a big, I suppose you'd call it a town. It's just on the outskirts of a great gathering of people who live in a, well, I can only say it is a kind of town. Yeah. It's not exactly the same as you would call it a town, but community, if you like. Mm. It's a wonderful, wonderful thing. Oh, I wish I could explain what life is really like. No one need fear dying. It's something to look forward to, believe me. I must go. But
thank
my blessings. Goodbye.
Goodbye. Thank you very much.
Bye-bye.